And that's the way we grew up. Our parents were wonderful guests, hosts when we were entertaining. They had beautiful, they were very generous and they were very open people and they were very sort of able to entertain. And we got our ability to entertain from our parents who passed that gift on to us.
Welcome to A Table for Two. Inspiring and educational interviews and stories with the best operators, owners and entrepreneurs in business and the hospitality industry. My name is Phil Halani and on today's episode we chat to Lucia De Luca, owner of Cucina Casareccia. Lucia's home turned weekend restaurant offers guests traditional Italian food on the back veranda of her Orchard Hills home. Lucia opened Cucina Casareccia at the Orchard Hills property with her three siblings in 2012. The humble restaurant serves a four-course seasonal menu which changes every month, designed to be savoured with family and friends and enjoyed in the traditional style of an Italian celebration. It operates only 2 days a week, Saturday dinners and Sunday lunch, with only one sitting each day. Lucia could easily increase revenue by offering a second sitting for each service, but she stresses that guests who visit shouldn't be in a hurry to eat. Food at Cucina should be eaten slowly while guests appreciate the open space and views on the 5-acre property. I recently had the chance to dine at Cucina and was absolutely blown away. One of the best dining experiences I've ever had. The authenticity and warm Italian hospitality was like something I have never experienced before. A quick shout out to our good friends at ProCow Dairies, Sonoma Bacon Co. and MD Providors, who are passionate about supporting small businesses, the hospitality industry, and also this podcast. Lucia, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Phil. I'm so excited to be here and to share my story with you and to reach out to all these people who might have heard about us but are not sure about us.
Yeah, I think that, like I was saying a bit earlier, one of my goals is to make sure that everyone listening after this will want to book here because just your story alone is just so exciting and inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm very excited. So let's start the podcast by talking about what happened last Saturday at your venue.
Okay, that's a great place to start because I have four kids and my son turned 30 last weekend. And he said, "Mum, I really want to do something out at Orchard Hills." So he organised a busload of friends to come out from Sydney.
Oh, that's special.
Yeah, they arrived at about 1:15. And my sisters and I put out a beautiful spread of food. So I'll tell you what we did. They arrived at about 1:15 and they were ravenous. So what we had nice and ready, because one of my kids sent me a message saying we're 10 minutes away. So we started preparing the beautiful street food.
Oh, that's
so
beautiful.
We did potato croquettes, which are to die for, stuffed zucchini flowers, and crispy fried globe artichoke hearts. And as they arrived and they stopped to get their drink, we were passing around this beautiful...
Like canapé-style kind of street food.
Street food. Everybody settled down. Then we had a rest and then we served a spread of antipasti. And then we had a bit more of a rest, and then which included my world-famous meatballs. Lots of those because everybody dies for those, and so a beautiful Neapolitan capsicum dish and zucchini and just beautiful food spread out on a table. Everybody helped themselves. Then we stopped, everybody was socializing. Then we served our delicious homemade 100% homemade lasagna, which was terrific. Then we stopped a bit longer. Then we served a beautiful Roman chicken cacciatore, which is with sage and rosemary and garlic and our 50-year-old red wine vinegar that our father made, but I'll tell you more about that later. And then we served beef cheeks, and then we served a beautiful endive salad because it's winter and we really just wanted to capture that beautiful flavour of a garlic and anchovy dressing on the endive, which goes so well with, because this is really Roman food. And then we served, my son said, "For dessert, Mum, I'd love a sticky date pudding, but your way. And I can't tell you the secret ingredient in my dish, but there's a girl that was part of the party, and she's a true blue Italian, and she said, I can't eat that sticky date pudding because it's not Italian. And I said to her, trust me, there's a special ingredient in there that will blow you away that is very, very Italian. And she ate a mouthful of it, and she said, Lucia, I need that recipe.
Wow.
And then there was a band, and they left at about 8 o'clock. So from 1:15 to 8:30, actually, 8:30, it was just one continuous party and a feast of food.
Were they the only group here?
They were the only group here. So there were about 50, 60 people all up there on the green. Like, the marquee was up. It was a beautiful day, and everybody had so much fun. And then the bus came, collected them, and took them back down to Sydney.
I think what a way to start the podcast, right? Because I think just the passion in the 41 episodes I've done so far, I think that first 5 minutes shows how passionate you are about what you do, because it's just the way you're talking about your food and the experience and what you wanted to create for your son for his birthday. So
thanks. I tell you what, like, I'm an educator first and foremost, right? Like, I've got a master's degree in education, and I love teaching people about food, and there's so much more to be taught.
Totally.
And there's so many foods from all over the world that we still haven't tapped into. And I'm passionate about bringing those taste sensations to people. And at my work in the city, because I'm a chef at a technology company in the city as well during the week.
Well, you don't stop. Work 7 days a week.
But I'm always pushing them to experience new taste sensations.
That's amazing. And we're going to talk more about your menu and the food and the inspiration and also
beautiful.
How you do two jobs at once.
Passion.
You're 100% right. If you're passionate about what you do, it's not a job, right?
So, that's right.
So can we take it right to the start? What was it like growing up in a traditional Italian family as a kid?
Oh, gorgeous question. So my mother was always regarded as the best cook amongst all of the Italian friends that they had. So my parents came to Australia in the 1950s. My father was a sugarcane cutter up in Ingham, and Mum came to Sydney 2 years later, and Dad met her here. And they settled in the Hurstville area, but after 2 years bought property out here in Penrith. My mother was from Rome, very refined, absolutely beautiful woman, wonderful cook. And she didn't mind any of her kids hanging around her apron strings in the kitchen. So I was actually cooking at 2 years of age.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember that. I have some memories of it.
Isn't that beautiful, just the fact that your mum was happy for you to be around? Because usually it's like, get out of the kitchen.
That's right, or you're making too much mess.
Yeah.
Like, and in fact, that was a wonderful experience for me, and I fostered that with my own kids. Like, my own kids were always helping me when they were growing up as well. So all four of them are good cooks. Yeah.
So you're in this family. Your mum loves to cook Italian food. You're growing up around the food.
Okay, I'll tell you a bit more. Sorry to interrupt you. My father, so my parents were peasants in Italy, and they farmed the land out here in Penrith. So my father could grow absolutely everything. He was a market gardener part-time. We had every animal out under the sun. We had 7 acres. He slaughtered the pig once a year and made prosciutto and salami. We killed chickens. We ate duck eggs. He went hunting for rabbits. We ate rabbits. He used to go foraging for mushrooms. Like, he just knew everything. And he was actually a very good cook as well. And every Friday night, he would collect, he would go somewhere. He knew a lot of people. He was a big extrovert. He had a big personality. Somebody would give him a kilo of cuttlefish and he'd bring it home. He'd clean it and then Mum would cook it. So we grew up with beautiful food every single day of our lives. That was such a big priority in the family. beautiful food.
How amazing is that to be able to be surrounded by that? And that's the experience you get when you get here. The passion you're talking about, your mum and your dad with the food, is you get that when I meet you and when we eat at your restaurant. So how special is that growing up?
Special.
And what was it like growing up as an Italian in Penrith?
So growing up as an Italian in Penrith in the 1960s and 70s was really hard because there weren't too many other people from an ethnic background. And I think I got right into cooking because there was a bit of loneliness, there was a little bit of isolation, there was a little bit of not connectedness. And so I channeled all my energies into cooking. And my parents were so wonderful that every Sunday I was able to cook a dish from any part of the world. Like they were quite adventurous with their palates. So they would let me go shopping, buy ingredients for whatever dish. Maybe it was Chinese at the time. I remember I was getting interested in Chinese food or some beautiful Lebanese food, and buy unusual ingredients and experiment with them on a Sunday for lunch. And they were so open to me doing that. I had free rein of the kitchen.
So they loved you. You could do whatever you want in the kitchen. That's amazing. So you essentially, once you got a bit older, you became a chef?
So I actually went about it. I came first at Penrith High in hospitality, in home economics. Wow.
I'm not surprised at that.
And I loved it, but I didn't really know that I could turn it into a profession. Like no one said to me in those days, you have to remember, there wasn't really any careers advisors at the schools. No one said to me, oh, you should be a chef. No, I had never heard of the word apprenticeship. Like I didn't know what that was. So I actually went and did a teaching degree first, and then at 26 I went and did a degree in food science and nutrition because I loved food science and nutrition. I was really good at that at school. And I'll tell you another story, which is I went to a Catholic girls' high school a little bit away from here, and I was very good at home economics. But the teacher pulled me up one day and she said, I'm not going to give you the first prize in home economics because you know it so well and you don't even have to study. And she said, for me to become a home economics teacher, I had to study my ring off in order to do it. And she said, I just can't give it to you. So how's that for... That was such an interesting experience for me, of course, because of her smallness.
Wow. But I guess that like hospitality came natural to you, right?
Yes, natural.
Yeah. And so you study, you're at university, you're studying, but you also, did you an apprenticeship in chefing or no?
No.
So how did you get your first start in restaurants or cafes or?
By absolute sheer willpower. So when I finished my degree, I had two young kids. So I wanted to spend a lot of time with them, but keep my still do something part-time on the side.
Yep.
So I contacted Sydney Community College and I said to them, I had lived in Chile for a while. I said, I'd like to offer you a Chilean cooking class. And they said, that's fantastic. Come in and have a chat. And when I went in and had a chat, they said to me, our Italian cooking teacher has just decided to go travelling. Would you like to cover his classes? I said, I'd love that. So for 10 years, I ran classes for Sydney Community College. And from that experience, I started a small catering business. So a girl that came to my class with her father once a week for their one-on-one catch-up, came up to me one night and she said, will you cater for my wedding? And I said to her, gosh, I said, the only wedding I've catered for so far is my own wedding. But yeah, I can do that. And so from then on, a small catering business developed.
Wow.
So, and I have fed a lot of people, you know, from all over the world. Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And when you said that, I can see the smile. Like the hospitality in you, in feeding people, making people happy through your food is so important to you, right?
Yeah.
So you're obviously, you're working in catering, you know, you're doing catering jobs for people. How did the idea of your restaurant, Cucina, come about? I mean, obviously, people listening to this podcast will now know that it's, you know, it's your house turned restaurant.
Yes.
How did the idea of Cucina come about?
Okay. So maybe about 30 years ago, a good friend of mine said to me, look, Lucia, you really should do something here at Orchard Hills. So that was a long time ago. And I sort of didn't think anything more of it.
What were you doing at that point 30 years ago?
I was busy in the city, you know, running my business and having a family and growing the kids up and just busy.
Okay.
Anyway, so I didn't think anything more of that. But then about 9 years ago, in about maybe the June or July of 2012, I was here at Orchard Hills and I said to my sister Maria, who's 2 years younger than me, I said, Maria, do you think we should do something here at Orchard Hills? Like, why don't we just have a go and see what happens? Anyway, interestingly, Phil, there were a couple of naysayers. Like, her husband said, oh, no, it's not going to work. There's no one out here. We're a bit isolated. There's not much passing traffic. I mean, 9 years ago, there wasn't much traffic. And then our brother said, oh, no, that won't work. And we said, well, we're just going to have a go. So I remember putting a little ad in the Penrith Press saying a restaurant. I remember ringing the council and saying, is there any problem with us opening up a restaurant? See, and the guy that responded said, oh, so long as your neighbours don't complain. I thought, well, that's all good.
You got no problem there. I mean, you're on acreage here.
So I put a little ad in the Penrith Press and a journalist at the Penrith Press saw it and contacted us.
Oh, wow.
So he saw it. He wanted to interview us, came. We were on the front page of the Penrith Press.
Wow.
But that was great in so many ways because we had all this exposure. But Penrith Council contacted us and said, what the hell do you think you're doing? So we had to go through all of this getting approval to run the restaurant.
So didn't you say you spoke to someone earlier and they said it was fine?
Yes, but unfortunately I didn't get that person's name.
So you had to get it officially
So that was a learning experience. So anyway, we had to get it officially approved and everything. And they were wonderful. And here we are, 9 years later, still running Cucina Casareccia every Saturday night and Sunday lunch for a long dinner or a long, slow lunch. Like, we have stayed true to what we believe in, so we don't rush people out and squeeze in a second sitting. It's a set menu so people don't have to think, because I think sometimes people's experience of going to a restaurant is they don't know what to choose and they feel overwhelmed with choice. So we make it easy and we decided to have a set menu. So you leave all your worries at the car, come up here and just relax. Bring your own alcohol. We're not licensed, and relax for a long lunch. Of course, sometimes people want to go and see a movie so they can say to us, can we be out of here by, you know, in a couple of hours because we've got something else to go to, and we have no problem accommodating people like that.
I want to talk more about the early days of Cucina, but you did touch on the fact that you want people to come here and not feel rushed.
Yeah.
And that's a big issue right now in restaurants. People are constantly trying to turn tables because it's from a commercial point of view.
Yeah.
Is it because you want to give them that experience where they're coming to your house and you want them to feel like they're at home?
Yes. Well, we've been interviewed a couple of times, and one of the things is we grew up sitting out here on the back veranda having long, slow lunches with friends, right? And we wanted to give that experience to people. What's it like being in someone's home and sitting on the back veranda having a long lunch? And that's what we have really tried to foster. Long, slow lunch, lots of courses, which is the way Italians like to eat, like one course after another. And I have to say, in the early days, we were really trying to work out what our customers, our guests, we call them our guests, like to eat. So I remember one day, this is a beautiful story, We went out there. I went out there with two plates to a couple, and I said, "This is our homemade lasagna." And they said, "We didn't come here to eat lasagna because we eat that every week, once a week at home." And I said, "Oh, well, just try this one and see what you think." And when after I went to pick up their plates, they said to me, "We don't know what we eat once a week." And our lasagna is absolutely so well regarded and loved because we make it from scratch the way our mother used to make it, with really thin layers of pasta, no white sauce, just really delicate and beautifully flavoured and very moist. And we serve it as soon as it comes out of the oven. Like a lot of restaurants, make a lasagna the day ahead and then they let it set so that it cuts really nicely, and then they'll warm it up the next day for the customer on request. But we don't do that. We make it fresh, we cook it, and we serve it. So sometimes it's a bit unfortunate, but it's about the experience of the beautiful food. Our lasagna sort of falls a bit apart on the plate, right? Like it doesn't cut nicely. It's not the best presented, but it's the most authentic flavour that you're going to get.
And that's, I mean, pre-Instagram, that's the most important thing. People want to have these photos of perfectly plated food, but you're creating and delivering authentic Italian food.
That's right. And people know us for our beautiful lasagna. Mm. I mean, everything, our signature is our homemade pastas. We always have homemade pasta, gnocchi or whatever, light as air. But our lasagna, we just cook it and serve it fresh. So that's wonderful. Anyway, so we started off. What was I saying?
Yeah, so you're obviously talking about. So let's go back.
Oh, I'll tell you another story as well. So this is another story about learning what our customers, our guests wanted. We decided to do this. Might have been about 12 years ago, and remember, we're at Orchard Hills. So we decided to do a beautiful squid ink pasta, black pasta with a lovely seafood sauce on it. And it was a Sunday because we change our menu every month. It was the first day of the month and it was a Sunday, Saturday, the first weekend of the month. And on the Saturday night, we served a couple of these black ink pastas and so much of it came back into the kitchen. And do you know what that's like, Phil, don't you? It's like you just think, oh, my God, my heart is sinking down to my feet. What's the problem? Mm. And I remember that night so many people did not eat it because I think they were a bit confronted by the blackness of it.
Wow.
And we collected the squid ink ourselves from the squid and then turned the squid ink in the squid. We used the ink in the pasta and then we used the squid to make the sauce. And I remember saying to Maria, my sister, I said, "Today, we've got to take that off the menu tomorrow. We cannot serve that black pasta. No one is eating it."
Was anyone trying it or they just didn't look at it and they were a bit freaked out by it?
I think there was a bit of all of that experience. Some people tried it and, you know, or a lot of people didn't even touch it. So the next day we just did fettuccine. And that's the beauty of the way we run this business. Like we can change our mind at the drop of a hat because we only buy ingredients for that weekend. Mm. Like we don't prepare and freeze things and we don't have anything, a huge amount of stock. So everything is fresh and on that day and we could change our mind the next day and everybody ate up the fettuccine.
If you did the squid ink now, the black squid ink now, would people eat it?
I think so.
Time to give it another go, I think.
Times have changed.
Yeah, they have.
I agree.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it. We're going to do it.
And so let's go back to the start of the journey. What was it like when you got the approval, starting the restaurant, opening your own venue? What was it like for you, that experience?
Yeah, it was exhilarating, actually. I loved people coming in and trying us out. And, you know, we have so many people that book the whole year. Every month they book a sitting each month for the whole year at the beginning of the year. And we have so many people that do that. And so many people that have been coming here for 7 years. You know, just once a month regularly to try the menu.
I mean, how what's that feeling like to know that people are booking one a month sittings because they want to be part of this experience?
Yeah, oh, we love it.
Yeah.
We absolutely.
So with your...
And, you know, for those people, like, oh, it's their anniversary, so we cook them a special meal for their anniversary.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So we honour their loyalty to us.
With the restaurant at the moment, you've had it for 9 years, you said?
Yeah, this is our ninth
year. Who do you run the restaurant with?
So I run it with my two sisters and my brother. So that's the four of us. So our brother finally decided he was working and he
he wanted to be part of it.
And Maria's husband, Elio, who was also a naysayer at the beginning, he's now our head waiter. Mm. And he's an interesting guy because he has been a waiter since he was 8 years old. He has got pictures of himself on the island just off Naples near Capri with plates up his arm as an eight-year-old. He's been doing it and he's been a waiter in England and Germany and a lot of places, and he's highly experienced and he's got the driest sense of humour.
He served us on the night we came and it was funny because it wasn't the, hey guys, like real, like, but he was like so professional.
Yeah.
It was perfect service, but it was like, you're right, there was a bit of that dryness, but it was part of the experience.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, I mean, some people don't get that, you know, but that's okay.
That's all right.
That's okay.
And when did you know, you opened in 2012, when did you know you had something really special here?
I think we sort of knew that right from the beginning. Maria and Elio have come from a restaurant experience, like they've had cafes and restaurants all their lives. And then I worked as a caterer and have loved the hospitality industry and have been a TAFE teacher. And so together, I think we had the perfect mix of experience. And it's, you know, a very flat structure, like we all have a say in how it's run and the decisions that we make.
Is there a lot of conflict?
Not really, no. I mean, for siblings, how many siblings work together successfully in a venture for 9 years?
It doesn't happen that often.
Yeah. So, and we talk about things and discuss things and, so it's really good. And it's a lovely way for me to spend a bit of time with my siblings.
So, and a few of you live together?
Yeah, three of us live together.
How beautiful is that?
Yeah.
It's so special. And you see the connection and the love you have for each other, which makes it an even better experience when you dine here. Yeah. So what made you, your model is very unique, one service on Saturday, one service Sunday lunch. What made you not want to do this full time, 7 days a week or 5 days a week?
Well, we actually decided to open on a Friday night at one stage, but we saw that we weren't getting the people coming in, like we weren't getting many bookings, and we put it down to this. A lot of people from out here work in the city. I think on a Friday night, they want to just stay back at work, go to a pub, have a drink, then catch a train home, get home and put on their pyjamas, let's say at this time of the year, and just be comfy Friday night winding down. And we decided that we didn't want to open just for two or three tables.
Yeah,
like,
of course,
that's not worth it.
Yeah.
And this place has a really nice vibe, like I suppose most places, when it's full. Like when there's a lot of people and it's really buzzy, that's the vibe that we want people to experience.
Mm.
And so we decided not to open to close on a Friday night, and now we'll only open on a Friday night for a booking of 20 people or more.
Oh, so you have that option of booking.
We have that option.
Perfect.
And we'll do the Saturday lunch as well for 20 people or more.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's really good.
It's good to know that now.
That's really good for a private function, like we've got a lunch coming up, you know, a 60th birthday party. They want the place to themselves on a Saturday for lunch, and we're opening up for them.
So you said that you book, your bookings can be booked a year in advance.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So cool. Lucia, when I came here, I've known about this place, for 9 years, and I've always said I'm going to come, and then it's around the corner from my house. So I'm always like, I'll come, but I never got around to it. And the first time I visited was with my friends, Jody and Brett. I came with my wife, and it was, we sat on the back porch, and it was one of the most amazing Italian experiences I've ever had. It was so authentic. The nostalgia behind it, like, it was just out of this world. I've never experienced anything like it. And that was why it was so important to get you on the podcast. Is that something that just, did you intend for that to happen, or was it just a natural thing because that's how you grew up?
A bit of both, but I remember in the early days thinking, oh, I really want there to be five antipasti. Like, and we serve food that is a little bit, like, you can go to a lot of Italian restaurants in Sydney and the food is pretty well the same, you know. But we sort of try to keep it a little bit safe and then stretch people's experience a fraction. And we... So we've experimented, and I think now we've got a really good formula. But it's always five antipasti and the homemade bread. Then it's the homemade pasta. Then it's meat with vegetables, and then dessert. And that's the way we grew up.
And I loved, you did touch on it a little bit, when people are coming. So your menu's a set menu.
Yeah.
The antipastis, the
yeah.
You know, the entrees, and it was, I came, we were just chatting, and we were letting you bring out the food. It was like,
that's,
it was,
right.
You were like surprising me.
We're looking after you. That's why we call you guests. Mm. You're our guest. And that's the way we grew up. Our parents were wonderful guests, hosts when we were entertaining. They had beautiful, they were very generous, and they were very open people, and they were very sort of able to entertain. And we got our ability to entertain from our parents, who passed that gift on to us, because not many people know how to do it.
So true.
I think we are, that's what we want our guests to experience.
Well, it's the experience we get when we come here.
Yeah.
And I've been raving about it ever since. And
yeah, thank you.
Well, so you spent a lot of time in Italy.
Yes.
Can you talk to me about that experience living
in Italy? Okay, so that's a really good question. My one of my best friends comes from La Valtellina, which is right on the Swiss border. And I remember in 1982 visiting her. She was visiting her family, and we decided to visit each other's family. So my mother's family is from Rome, and my father's family is Abruzzese. And her family is from La Valtellina. So I went up there, and I was blown away by the food, but food that I had never, ever eaten before. Dishes that I had never seen, ingredients that I didn't know anything
was
about.
Was it that, just that part of Italy?
That part of Italy. So, for example, buckwheat flour. So, for example, some of the certain cheeses that they make up there, the heavy use of butter. Like, it was just a totally different food experience. Then, after about a month, she came down to visit me, and she was completely blown away by the food that my grandmother, I was staying with my grandmother at the time, that my grandmother served. And she said, oh, I've never had this before. Like wild greens with a corn sort of pizza, cornmeal pizza, and other ingredients, a heavy use of anchovies in the food. Like she said, it just blows me away.
Wow.
So with this restaurant here, with Cucina, we've tried to grab food dishes from all over the country, from all over Italy. Like some restaurants, the early people that came from, that opened restaurants in Sydney were mainly Sicilians. So that's a heavy influence of tomatoes, cheese, garlic and onion. But the food from way north is totally different, right? It's like hardly any tomato.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and sage, for example, used in abundance. And so we try to give our guests different food experience flavours from different parts of Italy. And I'm interested in that. I love exploring the different foods of Italy.
And the experience of living in Italy and obviously being immersed in the culture and the food. Obviously, you grew up in an Italian family, but living there would have just made sure when you're creating the experience here, you wanted to recreate that Italian
That's
experience
right.
here.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's exactly right. Like a certain quality of being chilled, which I think Italians are very good at. The beautiful sort of hospitality, the sunniness of Italian life.
And I think that's This is why I'm so intrigued, you know, as you know, we're opening an Italian restaurant, and just the authenticity that you had, obviously, from that experience of being in Italy, and what else was in Italy that you that you've been able to bring back here and recreate?
Oh, just you know, like my favorite city in Italy is Venice, and I just love the Venetian food. And this month on the menu, we've got the Venetian rice pudding, which is just a beautiful dessert for this time of the year. And, you know, I had another gorgeous girlfriend whose family was from near Venice, and she grew up in St. Mary's. And I remember going to her place and being introduced to totally different foods. And her mother used to make a cake out of breadcrumbs, like out of stale bread, like a breadcrumb cake. And it was just delicious. So I've made that here. So my, I think, I love, wherever I've been, at any time of my life, I notice the food that I'm eating, whether that's Italian or whether that's with my Lebanese friends or whether that's with my Turkish friends or whether that's with my American friends or whether that's with my Swedish friends. I always notice the food. Mm. You know, I lived in South America and I sort of noticed the food and what makes those ingredients work and what ingredients do they use together. And I do that instinctively. So I'm always pulling apart a dish, noticing it. I'm like a camera. I'm like a camera when it comes to good food being presented to me. And I particularly love homemade food.
And that's what you get when you get here. You,
I mean, it's homemade
presented
food.
Beautifully, but it's homemade, authentic Italian. Yeah. So, and the word authentic and genuine, and that's we've used that a few times in this podcast because that's you're getting what you're getting there. Yeah. So,
but I love that quality. Even you know, with my Vietnamese friends, with my Chinese friends, I love them cooking a meal, a home cooked meal for me. Doesn't matter how simple it is.
Well, talking about cooking food, I mean, your kitchen. One thing I loved when I walked into the venue was your kitchen looked like it was just a traditional house kitchen.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you go to a cafe or a restaurant, they got a full commercial kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, like you said, they're pre-cooking things, heating things up in the Inox oven. What's the challenges of working in a kitchen like yours when you're serving for 50, 60 people?
Okay, so this house was built by our parents in 1979 and we're working out of the original kitchen. So this is a 1980s kitchen and this Laminex is heritage listed.
Really?
Like it is so old, they don't make it like that anymore.
Wow.
And we structure the menu to work with what we've got because, Phil, you'd be aware of this. If you can cook, you can cook anywhere with one pot, with one pan. With a pit fire, you can cook a meal if you know how to cook. So we structure our menu so that we use what we've got available to us.
And what's the challenges that you have working in a kitchen like this?
One of the challenges working in the kitchen, like we can't do a lasagna and a roast at the same time because we've only got one oven. So we'll do a lasagna and then we'll do a beautiful stew and use the hot plates. Like we have to think about the menu.
I love that, and I love the fact that you make it work. You constantly, because you're creating a new menu every month.
Yeah.
So you have to constantly be creative, which I'm sure you really enjoy, right?
Yeah.
And is it something where you've thought one day, I want to build this commercial kitchen, or you're happy with how things are?
No, happy with how things are.
And what's...
Because I think people step inside here. Sometimes people have stepped inside to pay their bill and they say, does all that food come from this kitchen here?
That was my thought, yeah.
And we say, yes, it does. And they say, how do you do it? And it is really a 1980 kitchen. Like, you know, the oven, it's a 60-centimetre oven. And we're just, I think because... because we know what we're doing and we all enjoy what we're doing and we all understand the science behind the cooking.
Yeah.
And I don't think that you do need all the bells and whistles in order to cook a meal. Mm. Like, that's deceptive. If you think you're going to cook a nice meal because you've got the bells and whistles, you have to take the time to learn the science, to learn how to cook, to learn, to be patient, to let the food talk to you, to let the dish take time to prepare. Like, people come to my cooking classes, because I run cooking classes as well. I run foraging classes for herbs and everything, for wild weeds. People will just, I know, I'll just take it one step back. People just love our sugo, our tomato sauce, our Napoletana sauce. So in my cooking classes, they say, how do you make that? And it's easy, but it requires time and patience. Mm.
But, I mean, that's the thing. You're putting a lot of effort into that prep, but when people are trying it, they're like, what is this? This is amazing.
That's right. Yeah.
And you've just hearing your passion for the food is just so inspiring. Honestly, Lucia, it's so – this is exactly why I wanted you on the podcast.
But I'm interested in the detail, right, Phil?
Of course, yeah.
I'm interested in the detail.
Yeah.
Like, to make a good Napoletana sauce doesn't take much, but – it does take, for example, you can make a nice Napoletana sauce just with onion, extra virgin olive oil, passata, and some basil. But how do you get it to be nice? Well, you probably need more oil than you realise, because oil is a flavour enhancer, and it's such a simple dish, you need some condiment, and oil gives the sauce flavour. Then you need to cook off those onions until they're nice and soft, and then you need to add a generous handful of basil. But the other thing is, you need to cook that sauce for a long time. You need to cook that sauce for a couple of hours. You need to keep on adding a little bit of water as it evaporates. You need to add a bit of salt to it. You need to taste it, and you need to let the tomato really cook, and that makes a beautiful sugo. But it's the detail.
I'm very hungry, Adam.
It's the detail.
Absolutely. And that's why, again, it's the experience that's amazing, but there's the detail you put in your food that makes this such a great experience. So you obviously, you know, you work here a couple of days a week, but you've also got a full-time job.
I've got a full-time job in the city working for a technology company that absolutely loves me. And I feed about 150 people at the moment, because a lot of them are still working from home.
Yeah. You're catering. You do catering for
them. Yeah, I'm employed by the company to provide breakfast and lunch. And I absolutely love it. And I take them on food journeys from all over the world.
How lucky are they?
Every single day.
That's amazing. And are you happy with that balance? You work full time? Because you're working 7 days a week.
Yeah, I'm happy with that balance. I mean, I've got a couple of weeks off coming up. So I take a break and I make sure that I look after myself. But it's what you said earlier. When you love what you do, it doesn't feel like you're spending any time at work.
Yeah, so true.
It's not work.
And you obviously touched on a little bit about the fact that you do some classes, pasta making classes.
I run classes, but see, at the moment I'm so busy, so I've had to let them go to the one side. I've put them on the back burner. And my wild weed foraging classes, I mean, I can teach anyone anything about food. I've always loved it, and I'm like a little bit of a walking encyclopedia about food and the food science. I love the food science. I remember when I started at the technology company, I got up on stage and introduced myself, and I said, I'm going to keep you all really healthy, because my strong interest is in nutrition and well-being. So that's a big focus of mine. So where I cook every day, they get lots of vegetables and beautiful vegetable dishes, and they don't really need to have much for dinner that night, and it's balanced.
It's a perfect balance. Yeah.
It's a perfect balance.
Yeah, I think, and again, I think your classes, if people were to, because people listening now that are interested in food will be like, we want to learn, teach us. And I think your classes, when you can get a chance to start doing it again, will be very popular.
Yeah, and you know, Phil, another thing is I've actually changed. I'm responsible for changing people's opinion about certain foods. Like, so many times we've had people say, I don't eat eggplant, and then we serve an eggplant parmigiana and they can't believe that that's eggplant. So, and or, you know, our use of anchovies in our food. And people say, oh, don't eat anchovies. And what's in that? And we'll say, oh, there's some anchovies in it to flavour it. And they say, can't believe it. And so we've changed people's experience of food. I want you to try some of these olives.
I'm very excited. We're going to try them now.
Try them now. So these olives,
I wish people
are
could
homegrown
see.
And they're cured by us in a salt brine. But the thing about our olives is that they have still got a slight bitterness about them. And Italians are absolutely in love with bitter, right? Especially in the wintertime. Like, it's not something that we fuss over in the summertime. But bitter in the wintertime warms you up, cleanses the blood. So we have all of these bitter green herbs and vegetables that we eat, and our olives are slightly bitter. And that olive with a piece of bread and a little piece of good parmigiano cheese is a marriage made in heaven.
I think everyone listening to this podcast is going to be booking.
And we put those out, like we made those, and we put those out for our guests.
So these olives are coming from?
Our trees.
That's amazing. Yeah. It doesn't get more authentic than that, does it? So, and just the detail, you go back to the detail. I'm eating an olive now. As we And it's just the flavour in them. It's just it's so amazing. I'm probably going to eat most of those today. Absolutely, I will. Most on the podcast, on most people's podcasts, I talk a lot about social media and the influence, and it's so important these days, but... You know, when I was doing a bit of research, I noticed you don't have a lot on social media. You don't post much, but it's mainly word of mouth.
It's all word of mouth. So we've never spent any money on advertising except that original little advertisement in the Penrith Press all those years ago.
That's so special. Like,
people come here, often it's a couple, they love it, and then they'll say, we're going to come with friends.
Mm.
And this is a place to come with a big group of friends. I mean, it's beautiful for a couple, but it is especially beautiful for a big group of friends get together.
Yeah, I think if you came as a couple, as four, as 10, the experience itself is amazing, because we'll take some photos and we'll post it up about the view, and it's out of this world. So is it something that for you, you've never been interested in advertising because you haven't had to?
Well, I think we're not very good at it. And we're pretty happy with the way it's going. Do you know what I mean? Like, sure. As it is, people ring up and want a book, and we say, sorry, we're booked out. So if we upped the if we did some extra advertising, it would put so much pressure on us and actually cause a fair bit of disappointment in others, more so than it already does.
Yeah, so it puts pressure on you and it creates more disappointment for the guest, which is not, it's gone against everything you want to do.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and you previously spoke about many people getting very emotional after they eat at your restaurant. It brings back memory of them eating with their family. That feeling, again, bringing them back to, like, you, I think you once mentioned that it's a mix between the Italian food, but sitting, you know, the Australian way of sitting on the back porch and you know, eating their lunch.
That's right.
What's that feeling like when you hear people after they've eaten, the emotion behind what they're saying?
Oh, we've had people come in here crying.
Wow.
Because, you know, they remember something from their childhood when they were growing up. Like, it is a real sort of... For a lot of people, it really raises some strong feelings and beautiful memories.
In 9 years, does that ever get, that feeling ever get old? Does that?
Not really. It's always a pleasure to hear other people's stories, and that we can ignite that in them.
Mm.
They come here and they think, "Oh my goodness, I had that when I was growing up." And what's really interesting, Phil, we get a lot of Italians come here that remember it from when they were young children with their grandparents. And even I get a lot of people come here for cooking classes, a lot of Italians who never learned how to make gnocchi, who never learned how to make pasta, but remember it and want to be able to make it for their family.
Wow. Yeah, you're recreating those experiences for the Italians that know that feeling, but also for the non-Italians, you're
giving them a taste of it. That's right, a new feeling, a new experience.
That's so special. And with hospitality, obviously you can tell it's your life, it's your passion. Yeah. How has hospitality changed over the last, say, let's just say 30 years?
Oh, Well, Dad used to say, oh, gee, we need another 20 years of people experiencing Italian food before people get the real story. Do you know what I mean? He used to say that forever.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think we've come a long way with Italian food over the last 30, 40 years. Like there's some really great restaurants who are just offering something a little bit different.
So who is it? Where do you like to eat? What kind of restaurants do you like to eat?
So, you know, I like Alberto's Lounge in the city. I like, just a simple meal. Yeah,
the simplicity. What is the secret to a great meal?
Secret to a great meal. I also work, I have a gig once a year where I'm a restaurant critic. So I do tend to go to a lot of Italian restaurants. And I think balance, a great meal is about balance. And a great meal, a great Italian meal is, like, I think a lot of people still don't quite get this. Italian food can be very subtle. And I think if you understand that, it's light. Like when it's beautifully done, there's nothing heavy about it, an Italian meal. It's light and it's not overpowering in any particular way. And it is beautifully balanced, like the flavours are balanced. Like that endive salad that I talked to you about with the garlic and anchovy and red wine vinegar dressing. That is a perfectly balanced salad. Like the bitterness of the endive reduces because of the slight saltiness of the anchovy. The garlic and the anchovy sing together just to make those flavours absolutely gorgeous. And I have served this salad at my work and people say to me, never had anything like
it. Wow. I'm not a fan of salad, but I'm going to eat that salad.
I was going to tell you a beautiful story. So when I was in year 10, I had year 10 or maybe year, actually it was year 11, had a beautiful friend at school and she was from an Egyptian-Irish background. Anyway, so I said to her, come over for dinner one night. And my mother did a beautiful home, we slaughtered our own chooks. She did homemade chicken noodle soup. And then she roasted chicken and potatoes and vegetables. And we, and served that as the second course because we always have two courses. First course is pasta or soup or polenta or gnocchi or, and then the second course is meat with vegetables and salad. Anyway, and my mother put out a salad next to the roast chicken. And the next day at school, Michelle, her name is, lovely woman, Michelle said to me, I have never had hot and cold food together. And I said, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. And she said, that was the best food I've ever eaten in my life last night. And she said, but your mother served a salad with the hot roast chicken and roast vegetables. And I said, yes, that's how we eat every single day of the week, hot. We have a salad every single meal. She said, I had no idea that they went so well together.
Wow.
Isn't that a beautiful story?
That's so beautiful.
And I'll tell you another beautiful story. So when we were in Penrith High, I went to Penrith High for years 11 and 12, which I absolutely loved, and we went on a school excursion. Anyway, we were at this excursion and we were offered a cup of tea and biscuits. So being from a good woggy background, I dunked my biscuit in the hot cup of tea. And people around me said, Lucia, you don't do that. Because, and I said, I was in shock. That's what we do all the time.
We do the same thing, right?
And I later learned that that in the 1970s was the height of bad manners.
Really?
To dunk your biscuit in a cup of tea, it was the height of bad manners. I had no idea. Mm. So that answers another question about growing up out here in the 1960s and 70s. That's one experience. So I've had a few of those sort of... And now I think, well, I'm sure that the Queen of England dunks her biscuit in a cup of tea.
I'm sure she does too.
And everyone I know now does it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. It's
wonderful.
It's the best thing ever. Hot, on a cold day as well, it's the best thing.
Yeah.
Lucia, for people starting out in the industry, in the restaurant industry, what advice would you give them?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question, Phil. So I would say if you're interested, I run kids cooking classes here during the holidays, and I can see those kids who have a real knack for cooking, and I'll quietly say to the parents, I would really foster that ability. So I think the thing is, anybody starting out, get as much experience as you can. Read, read, read. Practice, practice, practice. Learn. I think learn the beautiful, the principles of cooking. So I was a bit of a nerd when I was growing up. I had every cookbook that I could put my hands on the left-hand side of my bed. And on the right-hand side of my bed, I had, you know, all the Jane Austens and Emily Bronte and all of the classics, that because I'm an avid reader. But read, read, read good old cookbooks, good French technique cookbooks. Read as much as you can. Get as much as experience as you can. Go approach restaurants or chefs and say, can I just come and work in your kitchen for a couple of weeks, even if it's for nothing, to learn some of the ropes, and then experiment and practice.
Such great advice.
That's great advice, isn't it?
Excellent advice, yeah.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, and don't be afraid to try your own style, but only from a place of knowledge, because there's a lot of mishy-mashy rubbish out there.
Yeah, of course.
Like, there's a lot of restaurants that serve absolute rubbish.
How do you think they're getting away with it?
I think they're getting away with it because, well, a couple of reasons. I think social media has been responsible for people falling in love with the look of it rather than the substance of it. Mm. So, and I think people fall for that. I think there's less and less knowledge about food and cooking.
Yeah.
There's less and less knowledge, and people don't have the skills, and people are falling for something that looks nice.
Are you worried about the future generation of, let's just say, Italian food? You know, if people aren't, the younger generation aren't learning the things that you know, what's the future look like for Italian food?
Oh, I think there's truth in that for all food.
Mm.
And, you know, our reliance on convenience, I think that's really sad.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, gee, I want a convenient meal at the end of the day as well. But I try to encourage people to prepare, you know, spend a bit of time preparing some meals and putting them in the fridge or in the freezer and then having them ready.
Mm.
But I think if you love cooking, just learn as much as you can.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Yeah, I think it's a beautiful story. I think it keeps on evolving. It keeps on changing.
Sure does. Yeah. And, you know, we spoke a little bit off air before we start, and I wanted to ask you about women in hospitality because, you know, most venues are run by women.
Yeah.
But when it comes to ownership, a lot of women aren't taking that risk. Do you know why that is? Do you know why aren't we getting more female operators opening their own restaurants and doing what you're doing?
Well, it's risky. And a lot of... it's really risky. Like, you might... If you've got huge rents, how do you know your food's going to be a winner?
Mm.
There's so much competition. You know, taste is subjective. Like, what I like might not be what you like. Yeah, like there's but lots
that's,
of reasons.
You know, that's the problem for, it doesn't matter if you're male or female.
That's true.
But like I said, you look at my venue now, there's probably 80-90% women and 10% men, but I find that women love the industry but are never taking the plunge to open their own restaurant. Is it because they think they can't have start a family and they can't do both? Is that a part of it?
Well, the hospitality industry is very demanding and it's tough. It's a hard industry to be in. I mean, you know, a lot of the time you're working at nights and therefore, you know, if you want to have a young family, how do you squeeze that in? How do you make the time to be around them? Like, it's really, it's hard. You're working strange hours. It's a physically demanding industry. Like, it gets exhausting. Mm-hmm. How many chefs do you know, Phil, who have left after a certain number of years because they're burnt out or they just physically can't do it?
Yeah. The shortage now of chefs in the industry is at all time high. So
that's right.
Well, Gina, how do you deal with reviews?
Oh, that's a good question. that's a hard question too. Reviews. Look, can't keep everybody happy all the time. That's where I work from. People that love it, well, that's great. People that don't like it, that's unfortunate. That's the way the cookie crumbles, I think.
Does it, you know, if you get a bad review, does it keep you up at night?
It definitely used to more so when we were first starting up. But now these days I sort of think, like, I read the review very carefully and see and critique it. You know, I actually critique the review and think deeply about it and what they're saying. Like, was it the experience? Was it the food? What was it? If it was the food, what was it about the food? Could that be right? Like, we had one family come here. I'll tell you this is a couple of weeks ago. And we had beautiful Jerusalem artichoke gnocchi on the menu with a homemade pesto. She didn't eat gnocchi, he didn't like pesto. So we said to them, when they came in to pay, I said, I am so sorry that you seem to not have eaten much at all. And they said, don't worry about it. We are real old-style Italian, lovers of old-style Italian food. We are lovers of old-style Italian food. So we, you know, it happens when you come to a place like this. I mean, they could have told us that they didn't eat gnocchi and we could have prepared something else because we cater for all dietary requirements and tastes, but they didn't say anything to us, and it breaks your heart.
It's hard, yeah.
It breaks your heart. But she said, don't worry about it. We're just a fettuccine and lasagna family. Like, that's what we like, and chicken cacciatore.
But I guess anyone coming into your venue knows the menu because they can see it online when they're booking.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, if they're coming in and they don't want a gnocchi, there's a gnocchi on the menu, it's a hard thing to do. What does the future hold for you within the industry, with the restaurant? I mean, how long do you want to keep doing this for? Do you want to do more?
Yeah, that's a good question. I definitely have energy to do more. And I really want to sort of... I like to sort of still educate people. Still educate people, still give people a slightly different taste sensation. Like, I had a few people here in a cooking class just a couple of weeks ago, and I opened those olives and they blew me away. Wow. And I said, you must try these olives. And one of the ladies in the cooking class said to me, I've actually never eaten an olive. So she tried it and she said, it's not that I don't like it, but she didn't have any place to start at. Mm. Like, she didn't have any frame of reference. She'd never eaten an olive before, and here I was trying to say to her, try this olive, it's slightly bitter. So how do you do that?
Yeah.
How do you do that when she's got no frame of reference, and here I am getting excited and thinking, oh my God, this is the best thing since sliced bread. I've got to let these people try it. And she said, I've never eaten an olive, so I don't actually know what I'm eating.
Wow.
And I don't know how to compare this to anything else.
Well, after eating these, you can't
I'm interested in educating people. Yeah. I'm interested in giving people beautiful taste sensations.
Mm. Well, you do that really well. So, Lucia, we got one more question, but before I ask that final question, is there anything you feel that I could add to this podcast that I've missed that you want to add?
Not really. I haven't stopped talking.
And that's. I mean, like I said, it's been such an engaging chat because I just when you talk about what you do, it's the passion's there. So it's been amazing on my end. So the final question I have is from one of my favorite podcasts, How I Built This. And every final question he asks, how much of your success do you put down to hard work and how much to luck?
Oh. Well, I'm going to upset the apple cart here, Phil. Because I actually don't believe in luck. I think everything is about hard work, working towards it. Like going deeply and putting in the energy.
Mm.
Like I don't know if luck really does play a part. I think it's about hard work.
Yeah.
I really do believe that. I've had knockbacks in my life, I've had hardships in my life, but I keep pulling myself up and I just keep on digging deeper and being prepared to share my intellectual knowledge. And there are people out there that connect with that. And I think that then the universe sort of rewards us in some way for doing the hard work.
I love that, and that's why I love that question because it's so unique with every person that comes on the podcast. So,
yeah.
Lucia, thank you so much for your time. I knew as soon as I came here I wanted you on the podcast, and I'm so grateful that you come. You know, it's Saturday morning, and you got your restaurant happening tonight. So, thank you for your time, and I can't wait to come back and eat.
Beautiful, Phil. It's been wonderful to talk to you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
It's been my pleasure.
Thanks so much. You.